It's no wonder that there's so much suffering on the planet. Human suffering, planetary suffering, animal suffering. So many people think, feel, speak, and act according to not true information. And so how could we be really effective in our lives if we're dealing with not true information? Today I'm talking about what you know is in quotes, is not so. What you know is not so. That explains human suffering. To think, to feel, speak, act on false information basically guarantees that we're going to struggle and we're going to be frustrated. How could it be any other way? And when we hang out, when we congregate with other people who believe the same false information, we're going to end up in our frustration, in our anger, in our antagonism of blaming somebody else or something else for the struggle and frustration that we all feel. You ever see a mob in action? That's what I mean. I was told of a Ku Klux Klan rally in North Carolina. What do you think the religious affiliation is of the participants in this KKK meeting? How many, in quotes, Christians, end quotes, are in that group? How many Jews? How many Muslims? How many Hindus? How many Buddhists? Right? You'd go, those people know something that's not so. And they blame other people. Now, North Carolina is the home, unfortunately for North Carolina, to this newly infamous Christian minister who's been preaching hate and death to homosexuals. And he's not the only one. More than one person believes that this minister is teaching according to the Bible. Not the New Testament, for sure, but the Old Testament. You and I already know that some members of the KKK and this minister and some of his congregation and perhaps some other congregations believe that other people being blacks, browns, Jews, Catholics, homosexuals, the government, foreigners, women, and other people are the cause of their struggles and their frustrations. Not them, not the fact that what they know is not so, they wouldn't accept that as a reasoning, but it's all these other people that are doing them wrong. It seems that only a few Christians would consider that Jesus' goals included upgrading the Jewish and Gentile superstitions and understanding of God from the levels that they were at, superstition, to something of a higher value, of higher awareness. Refusing to know the new information that Jesus taught means that false, fear-based superstitions in the Old Testament are what people try to navigate in life with. People end up sowing hatred and using the Old Testament as, see, this is the way that God treated these people. They're going to end up sowing hatred and they're going to end up harvesting hatred from themselves and from other people. It's the law of cause and effect. There is no way around it. At some point early in my life, my mother said to me, consider the source. She was advising me to consider who was giving me some information, where it was coming from before that person, why they were giving it to me in the first place, and maybe a few other factors. Consider the source is good advice. We would do well to use that as a rule of thumb when somebody gives us some information. Consider the source. Because it's going to add other dimensions to our understanding of that information that's being given to us. In police television shows, these phrases exist. Chain of custody and chain of evidence. I called our youngest daughter, who is in college taking criminal justice, and I confirmed the existence of those two phrases. And those phrases are relevant in court cases so as to make sure that the evidence that's going to be used in a court case hasn't been tampered with, hasn't been distorted, hasn't been lost, and hasn't been changed entirely by people who are benefited. In other words, that chain of custody of the information, of the evidence, it's been in the hands of trustworthy, honest people all along. Some of the problems with so much of what we know are that, number one, it's not true. It's just flat out not true. The second thing is, we accept what we're told without questioning it. Just because somebody delivers it in an authoritative voice or tone, we go, okay, we accept. And the third thing is the unwillingness or unawareness that there is an agenda behind the delivery of this information that we don't even bother to look at. Why? Consider the source and why they are delivering it. Those three things are the problems with so much of what we know. But to me, this is the real problem. We refuse to expand our knowledge. We think we have the answer from years and years ago that we developed on our own, or somebody gave to us. This is the answer. This is the prejudice. This is a fact. And we don't bother to expand our knowledge. And there are plenty of examples historically where the expansion of knowledge was considered a direct threat and even an attack on the people and the structures that were built around these old beliefs, this old knowledge, this old information. You would say, and I would say, new ideas are threats to old ideas. They have to be. They have to be. Because old ideas have to give way now that we have new knowledge. An example, Galileo's new knowledge challenged the Roman Catholic Church's opinion about the sun revolving around the earth. He said, no. The earth revolves around the sun. Guess what? The church's reaction was he was branded a heretic, he was placed under house arrest, and he was threatened with death if he didn't recant his opinion, his theory. The Roman Catholic Church has created ideas that they have built the structure of their organization on, kind of like that was the foundation, and the church is going to resist and has over the centuries, sometimes with deadly force, anybody and anything that's going to challenge those ideas that their structure is based upon. The English speakers know that the Bible is in English. The guy who translated it, William Tyndale, did so against the wishes of the Catholic Church. How did they react? They put him to death by burning him. It's well known that he who controls the information controls the people, controls the money, and controls the power. The church knew that. That is why it's so invested in keeping people ignorant and overwhelmed. The church is taking this role or position regarding birth control, and others too. Priests being women, that's a no-no. But the battle over birth control is an example of the church's commitment to keeping people ignorant and overwhelmed. You got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 more children, you're overwhelmed. You're overwhelmed. You don't have time to take care of those kids, to develop them intellectually, emotionally. You don't, or fiscally, or financially, you are overwhelmed. In contrast, we didn't see any mobilization of church energy when it came to the child molestation problems that are very widespread throughout the Catholic Church, throughout the world. When that stuff started to come out of the shadows, was the church interested in dealing with that? Did they mobilize their energy to resolve the problem, to identify the predators, to get those pedophiles out of contact with children? No, they didn't. No, they didn't. They shuffled them from parish to parish, pretended it didn't exist, and it was a problem of people making this stuff up. The priests were protected at the expense of the children and their families. Certainty is an interesting concept. We all want certainty. But because change, I'll call it electron flow, energy flow, is the reality. Change is the reality. The only thing that we can really be certain about is that change is certain. But if we want something that's fixed, that's immovable, that doesn't change at all, we're going to have a hard time pinning that down. There are certain principles, primarily spiritual principles, that remain constant. I think we can be certain about them, but facts, as we describe them, they tend to change as we, number one, gain more awareness and more information. In addition to that, there have been studies that talk about people's recalling events that they've participated in. As people say, this is the facts of an event I was in, and as they recount that story, each time it changes more and more and more. Even the person involved in it can't keep this fact straight. They automatically change. Certain things get dramatized, certain things get omitted, certain things get reversed. Changing of the time, changing of the significance, all kinds of change happens. And you'd go, not much certainty when you hear somebody tell a story. That's right. Depends on how many times they told it, because it is not the same story they would have told the first time. We use beliefs to try to create some sort of sense of certainty. I say that those things that we cling to, these beliefs that we cling to, are like flotation devices, maybe like a life preserver in what we perceive to be an ocean of uncertainty and confusion. I don't know how life works. Let me grab hold of this. And we have plenty of people that are willing to give us a prejudice, which is something that we can easily adopt and without thinking about it. So, yep, this is all those people are this way. All that nationality is this way. If we grab those beliefs, say at age 5, and refuse to let them go long enough to validate them in the light of what we know today, gee, I've learned a little bit since I was 5, I hope. If we refuse to do that, it's like we will refuse to relinquish training wheels or structures that were created because we were children. And they were specifically delivered to us because we were children with a child's awareness. Can you imagine not letting go of something that we were told at 5? Just absolutely, no, I was told this and I'm not letting go. I'll say this, the God that you and I were told about when we were 5 years old is not true, not real, doesn't exist. Neither does Santa Claus, neither does the Easter Bunny. Neither does the boogeyman in the closet or under the bed that we've been fearing as children. And the earth is not flat. Now we go, oh, that's a good point. We do upgrade our beliefs, don't we? We do upgrade our beliefs. People tell us one thing, and then later on they tell us, no, you know, I told you X, I told you about Santa Claus. There is no real Santa Claus. I am the one that's buying the presents and putting them under the tree. Oh, yeah. While science and its practitioners in many of the disciplines, let's say medicine, they're notoriously resistant to new, important information. Do you think it's possible that we wouldn't have a cure for cancer if we were really looking for a cure for cancer? Do you think we wouldn't have satisfactory alternative energy instead of fossil fuel if we were actually looking for alternative energy? Nah, I don't think so. But despite how resistant science and business is to new ideas, especially those that threaten the status quo, their power, their control, their structure, they don't compare to religions and religious leaders. Rabid closed-mindedness in the three major Western religions, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, is the, if not the, it's one of the most obvious causes of the tremendous human suffering on the planet. Rabid closed-mindedness. Knowledge in all phases of human experience over the years, certainly over the last 2,000 years, has increased exponentially. There's more information being uncovered in 100 years than has existed in the previous 2,000 years. Except in the area of religion. People who want to add new knowledge or even express new viewpoints, what about this and what about that, and can we see it from this angle, are branded heretics or worse. Instead of being a stairway to enlightenment, religion really has been a barrier to enlightenment. And religion is a barrier to the expansion of knowing is part of my experience with Catholicism years ago. In my third year of theology at Fordham University in the Bronx, the Jesuit priest who was teaching that class told me in the middle of the class that my job was to believe, not to think. That was the beginning of an argument instantaneously, with me standing up and going into a full-scale rant about how crazy that point of view was. A God that gave us the ability to think didn't want me actually to think? How could that possibly be? The idea that religious dogma can't be questioned has retarded the growth of humankind and led to terrible human suffering. Religious wars, religious persecutions, how about Spanish Inquisition, Italian Inquisition, religious domination of indigenous peoples. So we were converting them. No, we were civilizing them. Oh, we were converting them. Torture and killing. Okay. That's led to massive human suffering. I have a book that was recommended to me. Its title is Pagan Christianity? ? It's an exploration of the sources of Christian rituals and traditions by Christian ministers who go, you know what, where does stuff come from? They're considering the source. But from the table of contents, you know what? They avoided dealing with the most important concept in Christianity, the crucifixion of Jesus Christ and its meaning. Well, the book is published by a Christian publisher. Maybe that subject is way too hot to handle. Christians accept the idea that Jesus died for their sins. He was a sacrifice to God so God would forgive mankind for its sins and thereby let believers in Jesus escape punishment of hell. Where did this idea of sacrificing innocent things to God to atone for one's own sins come about? For one thing, this killing of living animals and even people was a long Jewish tradition based upon their superstitions. Even Abraham in the Bible in the Old Testament was talking about, God said to him, you've got to sacrifice your son. Oh, okay. Weird. That's the Jewish tradition of bloodlust and sacrificing innocent thing. And in fact, it's this ritual of sacrificing innocent things that Jesus rejected in the Bible, right? He got angry at the money lenders in the temple, lending money to people so they could buy doves and other animals so they could kill those living things to placate God. Isn't Jesus the one who said God was a God of love who cared for all of its creations? Wasn't this a completely different view from the Jewish God who was considered to be a jealous God, wrathful, vengeful, punitive, just, angry, and who had to be placated because he demanded obedience. And when the Jews were disobedient, in order to atone for that, they offered to sacrifice innocent things. Can you imagine if that were to occur today? Somebody guilty of murder would go, I feel bad. I'd like to sacrifice my next-door neighbor. Yeah, well, you can kill my next-door neighbor to make up for the sin, the crime I committed. That's crazy, right? The only way for a person to believe that God wants to have its creations killed as a sign of obedience is to not think about it. If you think about it, you have to come to some other conclusion. Think about this. Could a God of love be pleased with people, finally these people, if they tortured and killed his son? I don't know. You'd have to imagine this. God is really pissed off at human beings because a man and a woman took a bite of an apple when they were told, don't bite the apple. But God finally forgives the human race because they murder in the most horrific, disrespectful, barbaric way his son. Oh, well, now I forgive you because you killed my son. The only way to believe that nonsense is to refuse to think about it. And if we refuse to think about it, if we refuse to reach out in thought and feeling to God and ask for enlightenment, we're saying to ourselves and we're saying to other people and we're saying to God, we don't want to know any more than we know right now. I don't want to know anymore. I'm aware as I want to be. Don't increase my awareness. So, did sacrificing others for your sins start with the Jews? No, it didn't. It started with other cultures before the Jews. We call those cultures and those rituals pagan. That means the sacrificing of animals in the temple was a pagan ritual. This spin that was put on the political assassination of Jesus was based on pagan rituals. Pagans and Jews, and today lots of Christians, are terrified of this giant man-god up on a cloud who is keeping track of everything we think, feel, say, and do, and is going to be just, is going to be punishing, is going to make us pay for our misbehaviors. Whoa. And for those people who know, in quotes, the Bible is the word-for-word, unerring word of God, why haven't you asked yourself this question? Why aren't we all Roman Catholics? People came along, Girolamo Savonarola was the first famous one, who challenged the church's corruption. Martin Luther and others followed. Guess which corrupt organization had control over the Bible, what was edited out, what was edited in, for about 1,400 years? You guessed it. The Roman Catholic Church. And the only way to believe that the church's corruption didn't affect the Bible when it affected everything else within the sphere, within the geography that they had influence, is to not think about it. Not allow yourself to know that what you know is not so. Let me back up and touch upon a few points that I think are important. One, if we don't seek to know more than we know right now, we are as aware as we're ever going to be. That's it. We have stopped our growth intellectually, emotionally. Two, if others around us are growing in awareness and we're not, it's just a matter of time before we and they recognize that we are unaware and we're stupid. Which may explain how those groups of people like the KKK and other mobs of stupid people gather and channel their anger at themselves, their own self-hatred, and blame innocents. Third point, refusing to think, refusing to question, refusing to reach out for enlightenment is a denial of divine intention. If God gave us the ability to think, don't you think it's a good idea to think and continue to reach for more, reach for more, reach for greater and greater understanding of our relationship with the divine and its other creations? To believe that God is more interested in our obedience than our awareness is to me astonishing. For people who are opposed to change or evolution or growth, maybe this is appealing. Maybe they long for the good old days of living in a cave and no indoor plumbing and only outdoor toilets. But that's hard to believe. Fourth point, the refusal to think and reconsider what we, quotes, know today makes us a prisoner of that old information. If a person told us a lie when we were 5 years old and we accepted it as true, and then we, right today, refuse to reevaluate it, we would be letting that person's lack of awareness and our lack of awareness control who we are, what we do, and what we have, what we can create, what we can contribute, would all be stuck because of that. Not thinking makes us prisoners of that past and of other people. Here is what you will want to think about. 1. Is your God a God of love or a God seeking obedience? If God is a God of love, you will know that anything you know, in quotes, that is not in alignment with love, is not that vibrational equivalent, is a lie. If it's not love, it's a lie. You need more information. If your God is a God of obedience, you're screwed. You are screwed. You will have a life of fear, struggle, anger, self-hatred, and recrimination. Go back to the KKK meetings. Become like that minister. Don't bother listening to me or anybody else. You are doomed. Point 2. If we're experiencing unhappiness and my God is a God of love, that would mean I'm out of alignment with the ways that God expresses its love for its creations. God is expressing it. It's not like, oh, God is not doing a good job. Yes, God is doing a good job. It's we're out of alignment with that consciousness. It is our consciousness that needs work. And reaching out and thought and feeling to divine consciousness and asking for enlightenment as to how to understand and experience God working for us, in us, and through us is the ultimate exciting journey of increasing our knowledge. That's how we know more. We let go of so much of what we know that's not so, and we can allow new knowing to penetrate our human consciousness. Looking for more knowing is the way to happiness, it's the way to health, it's the way to success, it's the way to love. And if we don't love the things that are the object of our attentions, including ourselves, we don't know enough. We need to continue to reach out for increased awareness and allow that to penetrate. And you'll hear that in a moment in the third sentence of the prayer. I would like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer in letter 8 of Christ Returns. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. we commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.